No pressure. It's just Sundance.
It's just Sundance, man.
Dude, I was upset that I was like, oh, I can buy a ticket to Infinity Pool, and then you get all the way to checkout, then it tells you it's sold out. It's like, that's rude. It's like, you can't label that sold out. It's like, how hard is that? But you know what? I know you're actually are at work today, so let's.
No, I'm
off. Oh, you're okay. So, well, that's good. Then we can.
I'm out of it.
This could be easier and much more relaxed. So let's take a look at two not relaxing films. One is kind of emotionally fraught, and one is kind of an action movie. Both of which open. Oh God, when do they? Did they open this weekend? I know.
Plane opened this weekend. Missing's next week.
Missing is next week. Let's talk about Plane first, then, since it is already out.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The latest action film starring one Gerard Butler, directed by a Frenchman, Jean-François Richer, who apparently this is his first English language film, which is also misleading because there's a lot of Tagalog in here. So it was funny that I'm one of the few people that probably got that reference. Most Americans don't know what Tagalog is, and it's the native Philippine language. And by native, I mean it's kind of this mishmash of like 36 other languages since the poor Philippines have just been abused over history. But no, so Gerard Butler, Mike Coulter of Marvel fame, Luke Cage, Tony Goldwyn, who's always great, especially in this kind of smarmy dickhead role that he has going on here. Daniela Pineda as the chief flight attendant on the plane. And yeah, so let's talk about this. It seems patently ridiculous when you look at it. Gerard Butler's the pilot of a plane, passenger plane. Problems, has to land it, makes the ridiculous landing. In other films, that's the film. Is the flight the tragedy and the, oh my God, he managed to land the plane and not kill everyone.
Sure, and in a funny way, that's the film's title suggests... That's the film.
Right? But it's also not misleading by the time you get through the rest of the movie, which is nice. But that's just the beginning. He crash lands on this mining road. Sorry, he controlled landings on this mining road on this island in the Philippines that even the Philippine military won't go to anymore because of insurgents and rebels and cartels and everything else that's going on there. And of course they know that a plane has crashed or landed and they go and capture the passengers. What's great is it's not a full plane. I think the fact that this is a New Year's Eve flight and it's a very small group of passengers, is both realistic and it simplifies the film a lot. It makes it easier to deal with all of the insanity that comes after that, which is putting all the passengers on this little, it looks like an airport bus, and taking them away and grabbing video of who they are so that they can try to ransom them to get money for, you know, their cause. Cause that's what these people do. I know you're not a huge Gerard Butler action fan necessarily.
Oh, I'm not. I don't not look forward to, I mean, I'm okay with Gerard Butler. I mean,
I didn't want to imply that you hate Gerard Butler by any stretch.
No, absolutely not. And some of his films are more enjoyable than others. Usually, as in most cases, it's not him as much as the script,
right?
That he chooses. But no, I mean, I think that you can, you know, I mean, what do we want from an action hero? Well, he checks off most of, if not all of those boxes. But I might not cast him in a high drama or anything, but no, he's more than serviceable. I mean, look, in the, you know, he's far more interesting to watch than Steven Seagal, or, you know, I mean, all the, there's a lot of B rank action stars over the years that are far worse.
Oh yes. Your Seagal, like, as an example, Seagal has like one mode. It's monotone and you get Seagal. But Butler feels like a guy that when he needs to yell, he's actually yelling. And when he needs to almost be sad, you feel that. So he's not an untalented actor.
No, and to be fair to him, he's done a wider range of things. Action seems to be where he's fit in the best. But he has done other stuff as well. So no, I'm totally, you know, I don't look at the Gerard Butler film and go, oh gosh, this is going to be awful. but I also don't look at it and go, well, this is going to be a masterpiece.
Right.
And I don't think this, at any point, this film, really tries to be anything more than it is. And this is something we've talked about quite a bit over the years, that, you know, if a film knows what it is and is, and does what it is well, that, and if that's not easy to do, and if they can pull that off, good for them. They've made a film that will be enjoyed by people who want to see that film. It may not bring in people who aren't typically an action fan. I mean, right. This is, you know, this film could have been a summer blockbuster in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not so far-fetched to think it's kind of bizarre that we're getting this in January, for one thing. But it's also a good thing that we're getting this in January, because it's suggesting that, you know, film studios are finally getting it through their thick skulls that it's not the time of year. Yes, you'll get more people at a certain point of the year, but that doesn't mean that you won't get anybody in January. You'll get people in January if you have the right film. And I think, you know, this is a film that you probably want to see in the theater.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It works better in a theater than it would be at home. Silly, yes. There's really a sense of drama. Well, I mean, the bad guys in the film are really bad people.
Yes.
And that's you know, and they are, you know, there is that sense of danger, even if we know where a lot of the story is going to go. There is a chance that we're going to lose a lot of people along the way in this, and that is higher stakes than some of these films, you know, put out there.
We lose a couple people early, lose a couple on the ground.
Yeah, so it's not, I mean, you, and when you have a small group to begin with, you know, so I appreciate that aspect of it. I think that's good. This is mostly about Gerard Butler's character.
The captain trying to take care of his passengers.
Yes, being the ultimate captain and feeling responsible for all these people. But you know, and they've slid in this little side story, sort of, that he is trying to fly home to be with his daughter for New Year's. And we don't know exactly the circumstances of their relationship and whatnot. And so that's also revealed through the film,
mm-hmm.
Which is a nice little touch.
And they don't overplay it, which is nice.
And there are a few things that they do that it's like, well, why did you do that if it doesn't make any difference in the end, sort of moments. But not a lot of those. And I mean, generally speaking, if you want an action film and you're okay with just one that's kind of generic but entertaining, you know, this is fine. This is a solid action film.
Yeah, and I think it's you saw it. There was a screening Tuesday, but then you had to see it later. I had to skip the screening because of the household disaster.
Yeah.
So thanks to Sarah Blue for getting me Adam passes to see this yesterday in the theater with actual paying customers. And but I had heard, you know, I normally, when we see stuff early, I try not to read the earlier reviews. Cool. And but I had seen and just kind of caught wind that people were kind of surprised that this was getting fairly good reviews from critics, not from audiences, from critics. And I was like, well, that's, you know, that's kind of surprising. Okay. I didn't read them, but I was like, I got that vibe. So I went in, I watched it. I was like, I can see why, because yeah, it's kind of it's a generic action film, but it is in a lot of ways kind of, one hesitates to use the word nuance. But we get, you know, professional responsibility, we get corporate, ass covering, we get, political conflict between the U.S. and the Philippines, you know, and the internal Philippine structure, but none of it seems unreasonable. It seems almost expected. I mean, the most ridiculous part is the fact that they decided to move Mike Coulter's prisoner on this. I mean, but that happens. They move prisoners, and they often do it without telling the crew until they show up at the door, because yeah, they try to do that. Maybe his background might be a little Hollywood, but that circumstance isn't really, I mean, it's not like Gerard Butler plays this, you know, indomitable hero in this. He gets the crap kicked out of him a lot in this movie, but he's just trying, you know, I hate to use the Die Hard comparison, but this is actually probably more of what Die Hard might have been if John McClane had actually accidentally been invited to the Christmas party and didn't know anybody. Because Gerard Butler is sure. only here and only doing what he's doing because he is responsible for the souls on that plane. And every pilot theoretically feels that way. You know, he has a military background, but again, it's not like he was special forces. He flew cargo aircraft for the RAF.
He makes
it a point. He goes, I was fine with that. Yeah. Because that got me into commercial. So it's not like, oh, I wanted to be a soldier my whole life. But, it, you know, it's plausible enough. And I know a lot of guys that love that in the Air Force. They love flying heavies because then they can transition easier to commercial air. So, I mean, again, so for me, it's like, yeah, that rings true. So again, but there's a lot of all the little machinations. Tony Goldwyn's character, you know, I need a press release for every single possible outcome. Crash and everyone's dead. Yeah. Crash and some people don't. We don't know where it is. You know, did it ghost like the Malaysia flight? You know, he's the corporate troubleshooter. He goes, oh, and we're not going to be able to get the military involved. I'm already on the phone with private assets to try to figure out what's going on. I mean, again, all of that actually does happen. You know, whether it is just corporate covering your ass or corporate trying to be prepared for everything, but not say too much. So again, it's nuanced for an action film, but it is still an action film, but it's a pretty good one.
Yeah. But they still land the plane on the road, you know?
Right. Well, so, yeah, my problem isn't that he landed it on the road. It's the second landing.
Yeah.
With the double wing tip. And I was like, okay, but I was like, fine, I will give it to you.
But again, because everything else is reasonable, you can put a couple things, because it is an action film and it's not trying to be much more than an action film.
It's the Jaws rule.
It just wants to be realistic enough that it can, you know, that it can put you in the situation and it can entertain you, and I think that's what it does. You know, and we live in a world where, you know, Rotten Tomatoes, is it, should we see it or should we not see it? Yeah. If you looked at this and thought, well, that could be fun. Yes.
Yes, you're correct.
It, you know, yeah. So, you know, I mean, I won't be talking about this. This is not a generic enough film that I will forget that I saw it.
Right.
Even though the title suggests that it is a generic enough film that you'll forget, but I will remember that I saw this and I will remember that I enjoyed it. I might not remember, you know,
every single plot point.
My general feeling is you could go to a theater, you could see this, and you will not feel like you wasted your time.
Right. That's what my wife said. We got there. She goes, well, that was good. I was like, yeah, it was. Yeah. Sometimes that's enough.
Yeah.
You know, it's good. And I love the fact that I did see the one story where they wanted to, like, plane was a placeholder name. And then they kept trying to come up with other names. And Gerard Butler goes, nah, it's plane. It's just plane. And he just kept going, no, it's plane. And then that's what we wound up with, is plane. So it's
well,
like,
I mean,
yeah.
like you could throw out like, if this was the 70s or 80s and it's, you know, like Crash Landing on Devil's Island or,
right.
Island of the Damned. Of course, that's more horror.
Right.
You know, that sort of thing. And that wouldn't necessarily be inaccurate, but, you know.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been. But I just love that he was just like, nah. It's like, and that is actually one of those other things about Gerard Butler that's great, is he actually understands the people that go watch his movies. And he appreciates the people that appreciate that he's trying to do the best job that he can do in a project that he picks, which a lot of other actors can't say.
Sure. Sure. So, I would never say that Gerard Butler phoned something in.
No,
at least I that doesn't seem possible.
No, I said, I'm a huge fan of the Fallen trilogy, which I guess we're going to get another one at some point. But again, a lot of that is how likable Gerard Butler is, you know? So he's likable. I mean, has he played like a villain at some point?
I don't know. Does the Phantom of the Opera count as a villain?
You know what? But I have yet to watch Phantom of the Opera. I understand it's terrible.
Not great.
But
let me point out just real quickly, it's not great and it's not necessarily George Butler's fault.
I've also heard that.
A lot of that has to do with the way it was directed.
Right. But no, I honestly, I don't know that he's played a villain.
No, he plays morally compromised characters quite a bit, but I don't think
so. I would like to see a straight up bad guy. Mm-hmm. I think that might be interesting. I mean, could he do a one-off Bond villain? Not like a four film Blofeld, but could that might be interesting. I mean, a la, because Sean Bean did that.
Yeah.
In, you know, Goldeneye. So, that might be an interesting, or even like a Mission Impossible villain.
Yeah.
Not the head villain, but like an up there villain, not like an odd job.
Yeah.
You know, but I think it'd be interesting to see him do that. So playing surprisingly entertaining. And good fun. But hey, look, if you enjoy what you're seeing and hearing on the Visually Stunning Movie Podcast, why not take a second to click subscribe if you're on YouTube, click follow wherever you're listening to us, follow us on Twitter at VS Movie Podcast, same over on Facebook. If you're on Instagram, it's Visually Stunning Movie Podcast. That would be awesome for us. We appreciate you listening. And now let's get back to the show.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The other one we saw this past week, which comes out this coming week, the 20th, is Missing, which is a sequel, not sequel, to the 2020 film Searching.
If I remember correctly, it was a Sundance film, and I think it was a Sundance film while they were still in person.
Right. So 2019 feels right. But the John Cho film, where his daughter goes missing and he's trying to help the police find her, but he's doing it all through social media accounts and texts and video. And so it's like a COVID film pre-COVID, which is interesting. And I'm going to comment on this thing as we go. But in this one, missing, a daughter, her mom and her boyfriend fail to arrive at an airport when she is supposed to pick them up after returning from a trip to Colombia, Ecuador. I believe it was Ecuador. So she reports her mother missing and starts assisting the police as much as she can. And again, it's done, you know, she's trying to get into emails and video and dating profiles and all of this other stuff. But it does tie back to the first one in that the film opens with a recreation on a Netflix series about the first film of the disappearance in the first one, which I thought was great. And I love that they just keep kind of meta referencing that show on Netflix. So that was good. So yeah, this searching, missing, fairly generic titles. But again, these are films that are designed to be exposed layer by layer because not everything is out there. It's, oh, she gets access to this and we get this piece of information and we have to integrate it with what we knew before and try to interpret it. But then you get another piece of information, which now makes you rethink everything that you already thought you knew. And they do this over and over and over and over and over again, just as they did in the first film. In a vacuum, this is okay. I think it works better as a set because you can kind of see both sides of the familial relationship. You have a parent that tries to figure out about their kid, but then realizes they don't really know their kid. And then in this one, you have a child that doesn't necessarily appreciate their parent until faced with the prospect of losing that parent and then learning things about them and, you know, figuring out how to appreciate them as they move forward, amongst other various convoluted subplots. So for me, I think the value is in the set, not necessarily in either individual film, unless you like to watch how many twists can we put in the last 10 minutes of the movie. And that's what you get a lot of in this. I don't know where you fell.
I had forgotten I'd seen the first film,
which I watched I watched last weekend,
and people had to, you know, the people around me actually had to talk about the film and say, no, it was this, it was, and I was like, oh yeah, okay, I remember seeing that film. But the fact that they had to go into depth and to remind me that I'd seen it. It's really a bad sign. And unfortunately, I don't think that this film is going to have much more of a lasting presence it's fine.
Right.
I don't know that at any point it's terrible. There are a lot of things that it's a script that isn't, okay, we just talked about Plane, and one of the nice things about Plane is that it felt like a lot of the things were plausible.
Right.
That this is the way things would actually get handled in the real world. There are moments in this film where things are handled in a way that they would not be handled in the real world. They exist only to serve the narrative of the script. And to try to, I guess, build sort of suspense and whatnot.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And both films are completely predicated on the idea that not only does every person now leave this digital trail wherever they go, but they seem to exist in a world in which their webcam is always on and broadcasting or recording. In both films, even when they're away from their phone or their computer and doing stuff, if they're like outside, it's, you always see it in terms of like news footage on a TV screen or something. So you don't, they never break the conceit of the screen, even if it doesn't make any logical sense. And I think the ultimate problem with these two films, and I know they're going to make another one because they're cheap and they're going to make enough money to make another one. But I think the problem with this is this, I equated this, this is like the found footage film in, and I think it has really kind of already run its course because during COVID, this conceit was kind of used just for filmmakers to keep making movies. You know, they would do, you know, kind of project films with their friends so that they all wouldn't lose their minds while they were in lockdown. And, but I think really as a genre, this is like the 21st century found footage film. And think it's done. And the problem with it again is that it's married so much to the conceit of we have to see it through a screen that they have to stick to it even when it doesn't make sense. Whereas at least in the found footage, they give you kind of this half-hearted reason why everyone has a camera, and then they stitch the footage together from that, which still at least makes a little more sense than some of the cinematic choices they make in these. Like I said, we're looking from behind their screen, but we're made to be understanding that we're seeing what their webcam sees, like we're that eye. So narratively, it doesn't make any sense. Whereas in the old found footage stuff, at least they explained why there is footage from all of these different viewpoints, if there's more than two. And a lot of times, you know, like Blair Witch was really like one, I think most of the time. This is a harder conceit to stick with. And so I hope it goes away.
Yeah, well, and I really did not find anything in the film to be all that compelling. The twists were just, because this is a film that purposefully hides things from you in a way that feels like cheating sometimes, mm-hmm. or feels like, I don't know. I mean,
which is weird because that argument is what a lot of people use to try to tell me why I should hate Glass Onion.
Yeah, but Glass Onion is straightforward with it.
Right.
It tells you it's going to mess with you. The way that it's structured, there's actually a lot of articles that have been coming out about how it really signals, you know, in ways that, you know, you might not initially notice that this is what's going to happen.
Yep.
But I think Glass Onion's smarter. It's more entertaining. It's more, it feels plausible in the world that it exists. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that is our world necessarily.
Right.
You know, I don't, but whatever world it is that film takes place in, it feels real. Whereas this one, I don't, it feels like they kept going, like they had some ideas, they kept stapling more ideas onto those ideas. Yep. And the ending, I don't know. It just feels like, oh, really? That's the way you're going to go with this? Okay.
Was a weird left turn.
You know, it's like, that's great. And they'll say, hey, but yeah, we signaled this early on. And it was like, well, yeah, you sort of did. But ultimately, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to remember this movie in you know, who knows, 2 weeks, a month? I don't know.
No, it's going to be washed out of your brain by Sundance. And then Marvel, and then like, Shyamalan's got a movie, there's a lot of stuff going to push this out of your brain.
And yeah, it is what it is, and I guess it's fine, but I don't need any more films like this.
Right. I don't either.
You can have, you know, but I mean, the found footage thing was very similar though, in the sense that there were a couple good films that came out of it. some early on, some in the middle, some later, you know. But for the most part, they were just largely forgettable movies that won't have any sort of lasting power.
No.
So,
but I think this one has run its course faster.
Than probably footage. Because. Yeah, I mean, whereas with Plane is a better film than this, but not by a ton, but enough so that it would be like, you don't need to see Missing. Like, there's really no, you won't get out of it, whatever, you know, your time, your money.
Right.
I guess if you really want popcorn, maybe this is an excuse, but it just, I couldn't really care less.
Yep. Yeah. And it's ironically going to theaters when really this should have gone straight to streaming. At least then, you know, you're kind of playing into the basis of the film. So,
yeah.
And really it should have gone to Netflix, which would have been meta. So,
yeah,
it's ultimately forgettable. Like I said, the only greater value I found was looking at having watched the two of them so close together, but in a vacuum, yeah, neither one is particularly, great at all. And again, it just feels like they just, twist for twist's sake. And you're right. They do purposefully hide information, and then they tell you about it after the fact. And that's why this just happened. But we're already at the end, so it makes no difference moving forward because we're already at the end. So it's just
at least Glass Onion does it midway through.
Yeah, and then you rethink what you saw, and you're like, I did see that. Yeah. I did see that.
Anyway,
that's what that meant. They don't really retcon anything, whereas this just hides everything until the end.
So that is
Missing. From, I don't even know who the director on this thing is. Oh, it took two directors for this. Nicholas Johnson and Will Merrick, who actually co-wrote the screenplay. So yeah, that's just, it's not that good at all. So, that's it. This week, there's one screening, which I am not going to make. And that would be 80 for Brady, which comes out in a couple weeks. Because we are getting ready for Sundance, which starts on Thursday.
And it's on Wednesday, yeah.
Yeah, so that's just not going to happen. Make sure you're following us on Twitter. So I'll be posting stuff there, links to stuff there as we go through, because we're going to try to watch a buttload of movies again in 4 days or 4.5 days. We'll see how that goes. So, it is now Sunday. It is snowing in Utah, at least where I am at. I don't know what it's like in beautiful downtown Salt Lake. If you guys are getting snow down there.
Yeah. Very wet. It was very wet.
Yeah. All I know, fun fact, my new sump pump works.
Hey.
Yeah. My downstairs is still destroyed. Now we're in the rebuild section of our program from earlier this week. But the water is gone and the wet stuff is gone, and hopefully in a few weeks we'll have a fully functioning basement again. So that would be awesome. So thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us. You know where we are: Twitter, Facebook, RSS, wherever you want to listen to us or watch us. Like, follow, subscribe, all that good stuff. We'll get you through Sundance, and then we'll be back with some big releases in February. Ant-Man, Knock at the Cabin from Shyamalan. I'm actually looking forward to that. So we'll see how those go. Dungeons and Dragons in March. Evil Dead Rise in April. There's lots of good stuff coming. So stay tuned. Stay safe. And until we talk again, I'm Mark. That is Ryan. Bye, Ryan.
See you guys.
And we will talk to you all later.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.